Our next speaker is Paul Helpern from the University of the Sciences in Philadelphia. He's speaking on jocular physics, a tribute to Bohr and humor.
Okay, my talk is Jocular Physics, a Tribute to Bohr and Humor. And in this talk, I'm going to talk about the Journal of Jocular Physics, and which came out in the between the 30s and the 50s. And I'm going to talk about how this reflected what was going on in Copenhagen at the Institute of Theoretical Physics, and what perceptions there were of what was going on in theoretical physics as reflected in some of the humorous articles in the journal. And I'm going to talk about who the contributors are in the journal and how this reflected on the perception of Bohr's philosophy. And this talk is, with the session, dedicated to Harry Lustig, who I finally recall his talk at last year's meeting, his summary talk. And just wanted to offer a tribute to his inspiring history of physics and contributions to physics. Okay, so what was the Journal of Jocular Physics? Well, I first came upon the Journal of Jocular Physics during a visit to the Niels Bohr Archive in Copenhagen, and I was literally handed a copy of the journal by the archivist there. This is very little known because it has, as far as I know, it hasn't been published except by the Niels Bohr Archive in a compendium that also includes the Copenhagen Faust. I'm going to comment on that later. A number of different languages. Okay. The title of the Journal of Jocular Physics is, of course, English, and all the three issues of the journal, the title was in English, but we'll see that the articles were in various languages. This was a tribute to Bohr on his 50th, 60th, and 70th birthdays on October 7th, 1935, 1945, and 1955. And it was viewed as an alternative to a Festschrift. They felt that if they contributed serious articles, that Bohr would be obliged to read every letter of every one of these articles, and that wouldn't make for a very fun birthday. So they wanted to come up with something that would amuse Bohr and amuse his associates. They were generally written by people who had some research association with the Institute of Theoretical Physics in Copenhagen. Some of the people had very long-standing connections with the Niels Bohr Institute. Others had brief visits, but all were united in a respect for Bohr and an interest in his work. This was reprinted in 1985 for the Niels Bohr Centenary, and that's the volume that I have. You can get original copies of at least the third one. I found one online listed for some, I think it's more than $10,000. So I was tempted to buy one for purposes of this conference, but decided not to. It's just use my own reproduction copy. And unfortunately, as you'll see, it's a little bit, the printing was not very good for the reproduction, so it's a little bit faded. In the copy that I received is the Copenhagen Faust, which is much more widely known. And the Journal of Jocular Physics shares with the Copenhagen Faust much of the same kind of humor, as we'll see. And Gamov, in his book, 30 Years That Shook Physics, commented on some of the humor in Copenhagen. He said that at the end of each spring meeting at the Institute of Theoretical Physics, they would produce a stunt pertaining to recent developments in physics. So apparently, there was a lot of humor and a lot of dramatization plays that are not recorded in addition to the Copenhagen Faust and the Journal of Jocular Physics. So these two are relics of what went on in Copenhagen. There's probably a lot that hasn't been recorded that would have been very interesting to know. Okay, so here's the volume that I have, which is the compendium. And in it has all three volumes of the Journal of Jocular Physics. It's a little hard to see here, so I'll describe it. Okay, so little musical accompaniment to the first picture. Anyway, the picture appears to be Bohr kneeling on the earth, surrounded by clouds, and sitting like the thinker for Rodin's famous statue, The Thinker, on top of the earth. And my perception of it is that Bohr is seen as someone who is rendering judgment. The original thinker, of course, was judging people as they enter the gates of the inferno. Somehow Bohr was judging different ideas and commenting on different ideas and contemplating, seen as a character always in deep contemplation. The very first piece in the first issue of the Journal of Jocular Physics was written by a Japanese physicist, Kanetaka Ariyama. And interestingly, the very first piece was in Japanese. It was translated into German. So there's the Japanese and also the German translation. And it's a very sentimental, an ode to Bohr's excellent teaching, and talks about the progress made in physics around that time, including speculative and non-speculative particles. Of course, the 1930s was a great age for particle discovery, and including the neutron, and also speculations about the neutrino. And you can see a circle there in this big picture. This is the only photo I could find of Ariyama at a conference. And you see him circled sitting on the fourth row, about the fourth from the left. Now, throughout the Journal of Jocular Physics, the role of the neutrino plays a central humorous role. Somehow the neutrino was seen as a humorous particle. And we see that also with the Copenhagen Faust, where the neutrino plays the role of Gretchen in Faust. And somehow neutrino is seen as mystical. There's also humor associated with its proposal by Pauli, who was a much satirized as well as admired physicist. He was satirized for his acerbic humor and cutting comments that he would make about other physicists' work. And the tribute to the neutrino in the first Journal of Jocular Physics is La Plainte du Neutrino, Neutrino's Complaint, which is a parody of a poem by Belgian Félix Auver. And the satirical poem compares the neutrino's elusiveness to a secret unrequited love. So the neutrino is seen as this particle that physicists would love to find that fits very well into, for example, the theory of beta decay, but somehow physicists have not been able to find this particle, just like a lover has not been able to connect with the one that he loves. Languages in the first volume of the journal included German, 6 papers, Japanese translated into German, that was the first paper, Danish, 2 papers, French, the poem I mentioned, 1 paper, and only 1 paper in English. By the third volume, this would shift almost completely to English. So you see a shift between the first volume and the third volume going from mainly German to mainly English. Who were the contributors to the first volume? Well, the most active contributor was Victor Weisskopf, who contributed either solely or in collaboration, 2 articles to the first journal. Others included Frisch, Hans Bethe, Teller, Casimir, and Rosenfeld were the contributors. So very nice mix of contributors. Rosenfeld was the only physicist to contribute to all 3 volumes of the journal. And here's a picture of Weisskopf. Weisskopf's contribution, Complementaire Philosophie des Witzes, is interesting because it's as much a philosophical piece as a piece with humor. It talks about the complementary philosophy of jokes. he ruminates in the piece about how hard it is to find truth, how truth is elusive, and how through a kind of complementarity, you can find truth through untruth. And untruth is jokes. So somehow, if you can look read between the lines for jokes, read the humor, you can somehow get a glimpse at a deeper truth. And he compares this to a kind of a funhouse mirror, a way that jokes reflect truth in a very distorted way. Now, we find in the journal much said about complementarity, and this is seen as something enigmatic, and there's much humor of the fact that complementarity is hard to understand, hard to fathom. Perhaps among the key tenets of quantum mechanics, complementarity is probably the most abstract and perplexing. It's not something which is involved directly in a measurement, but something more philosophical. One common source of humor is a juxtaposition of opposites, and of course complementarity has that, a way of uniting opposites, and contradictions form a kind of humor of the absurd. And complementarity also shattered the predictability of determinism. Determinism is, in a way, seriousness, but by shattering determinism brings in the unexpected, which is another aspect of humor. So through not having determinism, through having random elements and a juxtaposition of opposites, that opens the door for a comedy. And complementarity is mentioned throughout all three volumes. Now, it's interesting. If you look at the end of Journal 1, it says that not all contributions were accepted. And it says that interesting papers of high standard have been contributed by Gamov, Oscar Klein, and Rosenfeld. Since, however, the possibility of misinterpretation in a political and therefore not purely jocular sense could not be entirely excluded, we regret that they could not be published in the frame of this volume. So it's a little odd that these key physicists, their papers were left out. And while I was in Copenhagen, I found out why Klein's piece was left out. Klein's piece was a piece about Mussolini and complementarity, and it related to current events at the time. In 1935, Mussolini was saber-rattling. He declared Italy's intent to create an empire that included Ethiopia. He saw Ethiopia as his property, as part of the new Roman Empire he wanted to establish. And the League of Nations in Geneva, which was essentially powerless, but vocally urged Mussolini not to invade Ethiopia and then to retreat. Mussolini angrily replied, "Italy will pursue its aims with Geneva, without Geneva, or against Geneva." So apparently Klein found the subject, he did not find the situation humorous, but he found it as a possibility for humor with its union of contradictions. So Klein wrote a piece that was unpublished called On Political Quantization, and Klein suggested that Mussolini and other world leaders should learn some quantum physics, because that way they can unite opposites, such as being without Geneva and also being with Geneva. Somehow he could be able to navigate the politics of both both doing things that are supported and not supported somehow. He advised them to make use of the principle of complementarity. And through complementarity, Klein said, Bohr has been able to create almost complete harmony in the atomic world, including Pauli. So if Bohr was able to keep Pauli in check, then maybe his philosophy would be able to keep Mussolini in check somehow. Klein had a very keen sense of humor, as I saw in other pieces that he wrote, including letters that he wrote around the time to Ehrenfest, to Gamov, and others. In one letter to Ehrenfest from March 1930, he humorously calls himself the Consul of Borstadt, and it's a very funny letter. Here we have a picture of Klein with Bohr. Now the question is, why was Klein's paper rejected from the first journal? Well, think that there was a feeling that physics, as an international endeavor, should remain above politics. There was also little desire to anger volatile leaders such as Mussolini, and this could have perhaps direct repercussions. For example, a risk to Italian physicists such as Fermi, who were involved in the quantum project. And I'm sure that nobody in Copenhagen would want anything to happen to Italian physicists for their association with Copenhagen if Copenhagen became seen as attacking Mussolini. Second issue, once again, the same title in English, but now the motto under the title is in German, Nicht zu kritisieren, nur zu lernen, which is a reference to Bohr's way of learning about topics, listening very carefully, listening intently, but then responding not to criticize, but here are my comments. So Bohr was very careful not to alienate anybody, but at the same time, he always wanted to have his views conveyed. It's a very slim volume, and understandably, it came out right after the war ended. So it was mainly in Danish and English. There's virtually no German. I've read the only German that was in the whole issue, the motto. And the contributors are not very well known, except for Rosenfeld, whose piece begins the volume. Rosenfeld's piece is very interesting because it's also philosophical. It's called My Initiation, Paraphysical Recollections. Paraphysical, I believe, is a reference to parapsychology and the paranormal, which around that time in the 40s had become a very popular venture, including among physicists such as Jordan, who was very interested in the paranormal, and, of course, Pauli. So that's the reference. And Rosenfeld was one of the closest physicists to Bohr, and he was an ardent defender of complementarity. Rosenfeld describes an experience which was, as he recalled, one of the first times he heard Bohr's opinion about philosophy. He said that one time Bohr called him aside and wanted to talk to Rosenfeld about his philosophy. And then he said he sat with Bohr, and that Bohr was extremely quiet and very intent and spoke in a very low, soft voice. And Rosenfeld said that he had to keep moving closer to hear what Bohr was saying, and he kept having to move his head around. And after a while, he felt very, very dizzy from the experience. And the conclusion was, you can't even catch a glimpse of complementarity if you don't feel completely dizzy. Somehow that's the requisite for learning about complementarity. Third issue of the journal was in 1955, and the motto once is back to English, we agree much more than you think. So that's a reference to Bohr's diplomatic way of reconciling disparate approaches by having their advocates acknowledge similarities, most famously when Schrödinger was staying in Copenhagen, and according to Heisenberg, Bohr managed to persuade Schrödinger to accept, the story is that Schrödinger had a cold, and after a while, Bohr wore Schrödinger down and got Schrödinger to accept that there were some commonalities between the wave mechanics and quantum mechanics. One of the first papers in the third issue of the journal refers to CERN, newly formed CERN, and it's the piece is very funny. It's called The Standardization of Papers. As a template for papers with a lot of blanks, and you're supposed to submit your articles by filling in the blanks. And it says, owing to the increasing number of scientific papers, it is deemed desirable that all papers should be written in conformity with certain standard rules. And the template starts off by saying, title of paper, and it says, now, according to Schwinger, that has to be in each paper, because any field theory paper, of course, must recognize Schwinger. And it's idea of having a template reflects the flood of papers in the post-war era and also papers covering similar ground theoretically. Another paper is by Casimir called Broken English, and it reflects upon how broken English had become the universal means of communication among scientists. Reflection about language. Very interesting piece is George Gamow, The Heart on the Other Side, which was later published independently. And by then, Gamow had become a key physics popularizer. And as you can see a Möbius strip and creatures on the Möbius strip right here, creatures around it. And as the creatures move along the Möbius strip, they're flipped in a higher dimension, namely that there are two-dimensional creatures and they're flipped in the third dimension. This was an interest of Gamow's, the idea of, first of all, of chirality, which was reflected in biology and chemistry. At the time, Gamow was starting to be very interested in biology, and also this idea of higher dimensions, that in a higher dimension, a third-dimensional being could have their chirality flipped. So would have their heart on their other side, or their right-handed gloves would become a left-handed glove. And Gamow was very interested in this idea of higher dimensional exchange of chirality. Now, Gamow, by then, was a very well-known popularizer. He had, of course, had finished the Mr. Tompkins series, written 1, 2, 3, Infinity, which also explored the chirality issue. And The Heart on the Other Side reads very much like a classic Gamow popularization. It's fun and speculative. Okay. And the final piece is The Atom That Bohr Built, with apologies to Jack. This is, of course, a satire of the house that Jack built. And it just says by R.E.P. R.E.P. turns out to be Oxford nuclear physicist Rudolf Pirls, and who's shown on the right next to Aggie Bohr. And this poem describes how the study of the atom, all facets, owes a debt to Bohr. It's very appropriate for this conference, the 100th anniversary of the nuclear atom. And the poem ends with, this is the day we celebrate Bohr, who gave us the complementarity law that gives correspondence, as Bohr said before, as holes in the shell as well as the core, that possesses the compound levels galore, make up the spectrum that's due to the nodes, that belong to the drop, that looks like the nucleus, that sits in the atom, that Bohr built. In conclusion, the Journal of Jocular Physics offers a glimpse at the perceptions of Bohr and his philosophy, particularly complementarity, which is found to have some humorous elements. It characterized Bohr's achievements as extraordinary but enigmatic, and Bohr himself is enigmatic, and the individual contributions provide insight into the issues of the time, including major questions in physics such as the nature of the neutrino, as well as non-scientific elements such as politics. And here's some of the references, and I thank the archivists at Niels Bohr Archive for providing me with this material.
Time for discussion.
Is there any sense that the reason that Oscar Klein's paper might have been rejected was just simply because Niels Bohr didn't think it was very good or very funny?
Well, Bohr himself was not the one choosing what goes in the journal. So I think, it was a group, and I think they were, I don't think it was rejected for its lack of humor. I think it was really just that they wanted to avoid politics. And that's what what the archivists at Niels Bohr Archive, their sense was that political stuff needed to be left out. Yes?
You have to notice in that last verse of Rudy Harrell's poem that only in the particular dialect of German-accented British English does law rhyme with war.
Okay.
Those first five lines all rhyme, but only if you spoke the kind of English that Rudy Harrell's.
Oh, that's interesting, yes.
I'm kind of, first of all, these are the only three issues of this chapter.
Oh, yes.
When did Bohr die?
62, yeah.
I said, so it was ended at
62. Yeah, yeah.
There is a famous quote by Bohr that some things are so serious you can only joke about them. Do you know it? It's words to that effect, but I don't know it exactly. Do you know the context?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't recall that particular quote, but that certainly fits in with the spirit of Copenhagen and the humor.
And it's funnier in Danish.
I can't argue.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it was what you intended, but I got the impression that a lot of this humor was pretty, heavy-handed, not the sort of thing that Mark Twain would have felt much threatened by. Is that a fair...
I mean, very, very serious and very...
Yeah, it was sort of heavy-handed.
Oh yeah, it was not something that could have been presented at a nightclub and had people laugh out loud. It was some of it was almost bordering on philosophy rather than real humor.
Did you ever meet Bohr?
Have I ever met Bohr? No, and if I did, I would have been very. I was only two when he passed.
For the benefit of this audience, in 1960, I was a general at the time.
Okay.
And Bohr was invited to sort of the opening ceremony. He stayed there for a week. I was a general atomic at the time, and the director of the lab asked me to entertain Bohr one day, but he just didn't know what to do with it. I was there. Okay. He asked me to entertain Bohr because he didn't know what to do with it. I find Bohr, I talked to Bohr, he was extremely difficult to talk to. As you say, he sort of whispered, and he did not show any sign of humor. And after about half a day, I just didn't know what to do with him, so I took him to Tijuana.
What was his reaction to Tijuana?
Well, it was hard to say.
Okay, enigmatic.
Who are the publishers of the journal?
Well, the publishers, it's the Niels Bohr Archive. So it was never published. I think it was just published in the sense of being distributed. It was written up, and there was a written record of it, but it wasn't a publishing house that published it. And then later, Niels Bohr Archive collected it and printed it as a volume published by the Niels Bohr Archive. A mimeograph, that's right. Yeah. Yes.
Pice actually talks about hearing in Copenhagen language jokes that were only funny if you knew at least three languages.
Okay.
And told some and so forth, but unfortunately he doesn't repeat any. But my question is, Paulus has a small book about the ties between mathematics and humor and detects commonalities like conciseness, unexpected twists, and connecting things that seem disparate. And physics, too, lends itself to that as well. And you pointed that out with respect to complementarity. Now, it's true also of uncertainty. There's an entire category of jokes, an entire category having to do with uncertainty. I'm wondering if there's any other aspects in quantum physics that you've been, any other general categories of humor besides the one you mentioned.
Well, of course, the idea of proposing new particles, at that time it was so revolutionary, the idea of proposing the neutrino, that I think the idea of it as a ghost particle was seen as having some humor. Just
entanglement. There's a whole category of entanglement jokes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why don't you tell?
I think we're running out of time.
No, they're mostly visual, but
Okay, so thank our speaker again.